looking for my slide. There we are. So this is part two in the Beloved Community, and I'm going to be building upon a little bit about what I shared 2 weeks ago. First of all, I mentioned last time that the Beloved Community, which I'll define in just a moment, is the heart of mission-centric ministry. In other words, if we think about mission-centric ministry as an organizational practice, differentiating it from the minister-centric ministry practice, where the minister, where the well-being of the ministry rises and falls based upon who the ministers are or what's going on with that, because the church's identity is so embedded in who the minister is. But when we shift into a different ministry practice where no longer are we driven by the comings and goings of who the spiritual leaders are, but rather what we commit to fulfill in our collective lives, our purpose, our lives being transformed, and when we have that transformative experience, being so inspired that we want to go out and make a difference in our world. And when we build an organizational practice around that intentionality, where we exist for the purpose of creating in our felt experience, our shared experience, our lives being transformed and therefore empowered to be with any experience that we're having without feeling diminished by it, but rather empowered because of what we're having. And when we create a community that supports and holds the sacred space for that to occur in our collective experience, individually and collectively, then the heart of the community becomes essential, because the transformative process is a difficult one. It takes effort and motivation, and sometimes we go into our transformative experiences, the hell in our hallways moments, kicking and screaming, rather than recognizing what's afoot, what's happening in our world, what's happening in our own personal life, that something is needing to be midwifed and something needs to be hospiced, and we're living in that in-between oftentimes, the in-between the world of materiality and the stuff that's happening in the world and the dimension of ourself that is infinite and eternal. We are in a struggle to actualize that part of us that can transcend any life situation. But we have to have the capacity to do so, and individually it is very difficult unless we cloister ourselves. And none of us can do that these days, so we're constantly bombarded by all the influences that would cause us to have to pay attention to matters outside of ourselves rather than focus on the purpose and passion that we possess, that we are here to express and offer to the world. So to create a community that is organizationally bound to supporting its members in having a transformative experience, we have to have a certain consensus around what that means insofar as how we're going to be with each other, especially when we're experiencing the depths of challenges. And so I've talked about the Beloved Community, and I mentioned last time that it's linked primarily with the work of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And his mentor also, Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman, while their focus was on civil rights and racism and intolerance, the bulk of their work in their own ministries, I mean, they had churches too, was to create a community that would be an antidote to what is happening in the world. In a sense, what they were trying to bring forth was the kingdom of heaven on earth. The recognition that if Jesus says, you know, behold, the kingdom of God is within you, that has already been given to us, then if it's not our experience, then we're out of phase with the reality that God has given us that can free us from any of the limitations that we have imposed upon ourselves. So as we enter into the recognition that it is our spiritual work to work against the programming, the conditioning, the ways in which we are compelled by the external conditions and circumstances of our life, if we're to untether from that and instead link our self, our purpose, our essence in a dimension of life that is beyond, or at least not tethered to, the conditions of our world, then we have to dive more deeply into understanding what our capacities are and what our deeper inner work is, so that we can become capable of demonstrating that the world is not against us. We live in it, but we're not of it. So I mentioned last time to a colleague, a friend, Reverend Dr. Jim Lockhart, who is a religious science of mind practitioner, a CSL, Centers for Spiritual Living minister. He lives in France now with his wife, and he has written extensively about, in New Thought, about one of the things that we have to work against that is a part of how we are also sharing in the decline of the institution of congregational ministry. If we're to work against that trend, where 9 out of 10 churches in North America are in decline, we have to somehow create something that is an antidote to what's happening in the world so that people return to the beloved community as a sanctuary, as a resource, just as we sung this morning. And so in his words, he writes in his book, the beloved community is a collection of individuals who are learning to love themselves. And think about that. We're in the process of learning how to love ourselves. And that's integral to our being able ultimately to make a difference in any aspect of our life. We're learning to love ourselves, each other, and especially the planet and the universe. It's all God. And as we recognize that we come together for that purpose, that intent, then we also have to acknowledge that we are here to create an experience. And our experience that we create together unleashes who we are, so that we can be the change and we can support each other in that intentionality. And all of these ways in which we kind of reconfigure how we are kind of in our world and not of it, as opposed to, you know, so much, born in sin and iniquity and therefore a part of this dynamic that succumbs to the forces of the world, we have to extricate ourselves from the way in which we've been trained to believe that that's the reality. So we talked some last night, about the consciousness of the beloved community. And so as a consciousness of love, of compassion, of contribution, of healing, of vision, of care, of possibility, of pioneering, of all of these dimensions, we're already engaged in this as Unity Spiritual Center. We've been working these last 5 years on cultivating these qualities through all the programs and activities that we've been having. And to the degree that we've been able to successfully live in these dimensions of ourselves, we've been able to build momentum and depth in the context of our community, recognizing that we're it. And as we recognize that we're all in this together, then it's up to us to decide how we can best serve that impulse that is calling us into the expression of something that lives beyond our self-concept. And so ultimately, we have to recognize that there are obstacles that we must reconcile and face if we are to kind of actualize this part of the community that can really be a safe haven for us to be in the spiritual practice of taking ownership of our lives. And therefore, being in that deeper work of really, rather than making somebody the matter with us, just really owning our journey. So those obstacles, as Jim writes in his book, have to do with our human nature. It's our human nature to have somebody the matter with us, right? And our world supports that. We see our top leaders judging and blaming and making somebody the matter with the world and our country. And that never works. But yet that's our normal. And we allow that to be the convention of our time. And when we recognize that to have somebody the matter with us is malpractice, that requires a level of spiritual maturity to be able to go there. But when we go there, we're able to recognize that we have all the power, and yet we've given it away to circumstances and conditions of our life. So in the beloved community, we own the part of ourselves that has somebody else the matter with us. We recognize that that's our responsibility to have compassion for ourselves and others who are lost in their limiting beliefs, in their shadow. And as we recognize this, and this is the core practice in our ministry through the Q process, through prayer and meditation, through dealing with the latest science and brain research that helps us work with this body-mind process that we inhabit, then we can manage this obstacle. We can own it, and we can allow our efforts to really work on our shadow and liberate ourselves as because that supports the greater good for us all. The second thing I mentioned last time that's an obstacle is has to do with the times that we're in and how with technology and the advent of all the things that are a distraction to us, we are now at a place now where people are more into convenience rather than connection. And that's a phenomenon that we have to recognize. And one of the ways that we can kind of work with that phenomenon is while technology is kind of not our strength here at Unity Spiritual Center, although we've managed this wondrous live streaming phenomenon, but not without great effort for us older folks. But it's up to us as a part of the community of folks who want this trend to kind of be dealt with. You know, we have to acknowledge that the convenience of coming into virtual community is what many, many people require now in order to kind of take the next step, and that is actually come and check us out. And so these are trends that we have to identify and then work with and intentionally decide how we're going to augment our capacity to really build succinctly the depth of the beloved community. And then finally, the last thing I mentioned last time was the fact that, especially in New Thought, it's very difficult for us to come together and have the felt experience that we're all in this together because we're so autonomous. If we had everybody show up on Sunday, this place would be full, but everybody does other things. Not everybody does the same thing at the same time. And so it could be likened unto the idea of herding cats. Have you ever heard that expression used before? Have you ever identified with the whole idea of herding cats before? And I showed a movie about herding cats. How many of you saw the movie? Anybody not see that movie before? Okay, let's check it out. It's quick. It's brief.
This man right here is my great-grandfather. He's the first cat herder in our family.
Herding cats. Don't let anybody tell you it's easy.
Anybody can herd cattle. Holding together 10,000 half-wild short hairs, well, that's another thing altogether.
Being a cat herder is probably about the toughest thing I think I've ever done.
I got this one this morning right here, and if you look at his face, it's just ripped to shreds, you know?
You see the movies, you hear the stories. I'm living a dream. Not everyone can do what we do.
I wouldn't do nothing else.
It ain't an easy job, but when you bring a herd into town and you ain't lost a one of them, ain't a feeling like it in the world.
But I feel like I can't bring the herd in. I've lost a lot of folks. No, with my talk, that is, not anything else. So I'm trying to... So the whole idea of really doing things together is a part of the beloved community, and that's a challenge for us because we are all into our own lives, and that's important. And so the time that we spend together, though, is one in which we energize ourselves and realign with the resonance field that we're trying to create in the context of this space, this energy. I mean, hopefully you come in here and feel a presence. You feel energetically kind of a greater alignment when you walk into this sanctuary because this is the tone, this is the vibration, this is the frequency we want to establish. So I'm also wanting to introduce another concept of the beloved community that helps us really kind of align ourselves with something that wants to happen. And so we can think about our own purpose in the sense of, you know, I have my needs, my wants, my desires, the things that are important to me. And then we can also see that those very things that are our own unique inclinations can get us into quite a bit of trouble from time to time. Have you ever thought that your own good got in the way of your better?
Yeah.
Ever had that experience before? And so there's an important dimension of recognition that we have to call on a higher purpose if we are to step out of a dimension of ourself that's replicating our current reality that has our life being against us. So last week I was driving to our property in Kettle Falls, and I was listening to NPR in an interview with an individual from South Africa who was pioneering a new university experience. And so how many of you have gone to college before? Okay, a lot of you have, a lot of educated people in our community. And so when you go to college, you start out with some aspirations, thinking, okay, what am I going to do with myself? And you select a major, and you take on a curriculum, and then if you graduate and get a degree, you try to apply that education to some vocation or some pursuit. And whether or not all of the dynamics of your study, your academic training, your work in getting that degree, and therefore later in graduate school or further, whether or not all of that effort landed on you actually zoning in on something that had longevity in your life is up for grabs. And so this person presents that dynamic in life of how we've become, how we have become so conditioned by the system of education that we haven't really been letting the system pull out of us what we're capable of becoming. And so he said this, rather than asking individual students to declare a major, we ask them to declare what their mission is. Imagine beginning your college education with having first to declare what your mission is and then having your advisors build your curriculum around how to fulfill that. What if that became the way in which we are acclimated to become participants in our society? By recognizing that we're here to fulfill a purpose, not get a job, not sort of kind of find our place in all of these trappings, but somehow contribute to what is possible when we allow something to live itself through us. And so as he talked about this idea, I thought to myself, my God, what if we lived that way? What if I grew up, when I started college, really pondering, what am I here to accomplish? What is my contribution? And what if the system allowed that to flower and to be encouraged? And then I thought, well, what if we made that a part of what we're about? That part of our effort is, and part of our journey, part of what the sacred community is about, is recognizing that there's an intent that is seeking to live itself through us as a collective community. In other words, Unity Spiritual Center is here to fulfill something in this community, as well as each of us is here to fulfill something in our life. But if we don't see that that's the intentionality of what it means to be in the beloved community, we will forget that that is the intent of spiritual practice, is to allow ourselves to be used by the intelligence of the universe to bring forth the very good that we're seeking otherwise through our limiting beliefs and thoughts of ourselves. And so if we look to the whole idea of if there's a dimension of the beloved community that's all about empowering both the community as well as individual members in the context of fulfillment of purpose, then part of our quest is to be in the question, what is ours to do? What is ours to express and live in this world? And so how many of you have ever been in the question, well, what is my life's purpose? And have you gotten real clear about that? So in part, it's hard for us to even talk about our life purpose because it's such a vague thing, generally speaking. We don't think in terms of grounding why we're here in everything that we're doing. In other words, we know that we're here for a purpose, but we're doing all kinds of things, but it doesn't link itself to the divine. It doesn't link itself with an intentionality that is trying to be in this world a change that can be part of the awakening process. And so we have to have, while our mind wants to attach itself, I want my purpose to make me some money, I want my purpose to make me happy, I want my purpose, we have things attached to the experience of fulfilling ourselves, but we don't know what that experience is going to be. And therefore, we don't necessarily enter into the intent of unfolding that in us. Because it's not like you just go through a class and find your purpose. Your purpose finds you. I mean, imagine for a moment, if you had a purpose that required $1 million, could we not imagine that the universe can come up with that $1 million for you if that's what you really needed to fulfill your purpose? And could we also go to the place, well, if you don't have $1 million and you believe that's what you need, it could be said that you're not showing up to it on purpose. In other words, there's something that we're not showing up to on purpose because that's what's required for it to find us, for us to complete the connection, the circuitry of the divine. The divine requires that circuit to be completed, the completion of our connection to the divine and our capacity to make a difference. That circuit has to be conditioned in our neural architecture. So if we look to our way-showers, the people who have kind of found a purpose or at least changed and transformed people's lives, you know, let's look at Jesus, for instance. Okay, what was his purpose? Let's just imagine. Let's pretend. Was his purpose to make a lot of money?
Nope.
No. Was his purpose to save people? Religion would say that's what religion has made up about his purpose, but there is no effort on his part to rescue anybody. And so as we look at his life and his teachings, and as we kind of be in the question, was he on purpose? Yes, Jesus was on purpose, right? But we cannot define his purpose in the context necessarily of what he is able to acquire, which is the mistake that we make. Instead, he built his sense of purpose on basic principles. And so I see his definition of his purpose in these words, when he said, I am the way and the truth and the life of God. And so let's just look at that and see that what if this was Jesus' way of articulating what purpose is as it lives in us, as an expression. And so think about it. I am the way. What does that mean? That means that we are the avenue through which the divine lives and expresses itself. There's something that happens through us. We're the avenue. We're the way. And when we're not the way, we are
in the way.
Okay, choose one. Because in any moment, you're either one or the other. Most of us live most of our lives in the way of God. How do we live most of our lives in the way of God? Because we live most of our lives in judgment, blame, separation, fear, needing to be right, having to have things be a certain way. So all the ways in which our programmed self operates is in the way of God. Our conditioning and our programming is in the way. I mentioned last time that I talked about this particular scripture. Imagine someone you love unconditionally. And so that experience of unconditional love that flows through you is an experience of what it means to be the way of God. But because we can put somebody else in the place and have a different experience where we're now not feeling the same overwhelming extension of this dimension of ourself called empathy, love, or compassion, because we have somebody that has hurt us or been against us, there's a different felt sense. Okay, well, that's an example of being in the way. Because you see, the divine still wants to love, still wants to be the expression of this. It doesn't matter who's in the way, because who's in the way is the way. I think we've been talking about that for a while. So we have to recognize that part of unleashing our purpose, part of aligning with the intent of the universe to fulfill itself through us, uses our very life, everything that we have. There's nothing wasted. When we push away what we're having, when we not welcome it in, then we shut down this dimension of ourself that can activate our capacity of empowerment. Bless you. The second thing, Jesus says, I am the truth. Okay, and so how can we take that concept of how he used it in his own expression, and how are we, in our experience, the truth of God, and how does that enable purpose to fulfill itself through us? Well, the one thing that we can say about any life circumstance is that there is the truth about it. Think about it for a moment. In any situation, there is the truth about it. And you are the truth about it. I am the truth. In other words, we have the power to declare what we're having for us or against us. We have the power to proclaim God in the situation or not. We do that, not the situation. And if we're not exercising that dimension of our capacity, then we're letting life happen to us instead of life happening through us. And then Jesus says, I am the life of God. And then as we see that dimension, then we have to understand that the meaning is that life is God, that our life is God life. There is no distinction between our life and God's life. Just like there's no distinction between the wave and the ocean. It's just a different expression of the whole. And as we recognize that purpose is unleashed as we connect ourselves to the divine and recognize that there's no part of us that is outside of life, outside of this impulse to bring forth a greater good consistent with the fulfillment of purpose, we could say that on one level, the fulfillment of purpose has as its effect a creation of a world that works for everyone. Could we not agree that the fulfillment of purpose with a capital P is a creation of a world where we would trade places with anybody because we would know that every place in the world has its own blessing as opposed to its own curse? Right now, we won't trade places with anybody in the world. And so we have yet to create the beloved community. And while we might not be able to do it in our lifetime to create that experience for the whole world, we can in our lifetime create that beloved community in our experience here. And we just have to make that our value. We have to make that our purpose, is to allow the expression of the beloved community in the context of its recognition that we're all here to fulfill a purpose. And it's hard to do this work. And we cannot succeed doing it by ourselves. And the world is desperate for us to be about this work. So let's finish up with the homework. So a few questions to consider. If you could have chosen a purpose rather than a college major, what would that be? Can you see how you are sometimes the way of God and in the way of God? Identify some examples of both. And explain how you can be the truth of God. And what does it mean to be the life of God? Give it some thought. God bless you.